Rainmaker FM is brought to you by Digital Commerce Institute, the premier online resource for discovering smarter ways to create and sell your own profitable digital products and services. Our value-rich charter membership offer ends November 6th, 2015. Find out more at digitalcommerce.com. That's digitalcommerce.com.
Welcome to Search and Social, a Rainmaker.fm production. This is Lauren Baker, your host from Foundation Digital. And with me today, I'm going to be bringing on Bill Slosky, a man of many trades within the world of SEO. But for the most part, we will be discussing the new Google rollout of RankBrain, which I have called Brain Rank numerous times. I guess that pretty much dates me in terms of SEOs and talking about PageRank. Bill, welcome to Search and Social.
Good morning. Thank you, Lauren.
So let's just do a quick introduction, Bill, for any of the listeners that haven't had the chance to meet you or read your work before.
My name is Bill Slosky. I'm the Director of Search Marketing for a Virginia-based SEO firm called GoFish Digital. I live in Carlsbad, California, and moved out here in January. I'm really enjoying San Diego. Never knew the West Coast could be this different from the East Coast. So one of the things I've been doing for a few years is doing research in the patent office to find patents from Google. And I came across RankBrain yesterday morning, searching through news about Google, and it popped up, and I started digging in.
Great. And just to let everyone know, like, I came across the news as well, and Bill and I have a little bit of a history together. We've worked together in the past on some projects, and I've always, you know, whenever there's something new that rolls out, I generally do turn to Bill and his blog, SEO by the Sea. Bill, you have a knack for digging into patent stuff, and you've done it forever. And, you know, what percentage of the patents do you think that you've reviewed for search have come to fruition by the companies, by the way?
It's almost impossible to tell.
Yeah, because you never really know, right? I mean,
sometimes you know for certain.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Sure, the patent says that it's for universal search, and you know, a couple days later, the patent gets granted, and Google introduces universal search.
Exactly.
And you read through the patent, and it's exactly like what you see on the screen.
Right, right.
When Google released Hummingbird, I had spent 2 weeks or so, maybe 3 weeks, going through a patent that I thought was really interesting. Had no idea that it was something that was going to be released. Agreed to do a hangout with Max Mincer about that query rewriting approach in the patent. And we changed the topic at the last minute to marketing your SEO firm. Got out of the hangout and people started asking me about if I had heard about Hummingbird.
It happens, right? So right. Like what you're saying, RankBrain rolled out, what, yesterday morning, maybe the night before? Well, the announcement did.
And right. It's been supposedly out for months.
Yeah, which is typically something that the folks at Google like to do, it seems. And and then, of course, you know, a handful of people turned into RankBrain experts overnight. But like I said, that tends to happen in the world of SEO as well. But I wanted to turn to you, Bill, and just get an understanding for our listeners of, you know, to your understanding exactly what RankBrain is, how it is connected to Hummingbird, especially with the query rewriting, and, you know, basically where you see this going. And should anyone be dramatically changing their course based upon this announcement?
Okay, those are all good, simple, easy questions. So RankBrain, the way it was introduced and talked about was that it's a project started originally by five people at Google, and they named a couple of the people, which gave me some information to use to dig into patents with. Supposedly, since they started doing work, they were joined by a lot of other people, and it became a lot more complex. So one of the names that was in the Bloomberg News article, I guess Bloomberg News did an interview with a search engineer at Google, and he relayed most of this information about the Rank Brain project. But so the person whose name, one of the persons whose name he gave out was Thomas Stroman. So I went to the office and did a search on Thomas Stroman to see what types of patents he'd come up with or come out with, and noticed that he had written one called Using Concepts as Contexts for Query Term Substitutions. And I said, that title sounds familiar. The patent I ended up calling the Hummingbird patent involved query term substitutions. So I compared the two, and this one was a little different, a little bit more complex, but along the same lines, it involved rewriting queries, which is what the Bloomberg News article told us was the focus of Rank Brain. And the patent included some examples. So I wrote about it in the GoFish Digital blog website.
Yes.
And, you know, one example, the original query was New York Times puzzle. And they showed how they got to a revised query that was puzzle, question mark, crossword. And then in quotation, in parentheses, New York Times. So it seems that this process noticed that when the words puzzle and New York Times appeared together frequently, the word crossword also appeared frequently. So they rewrote the query to include the word crossword. And if you do a search for New York Times puzzle, you see most of the results you end up with have the word crossword in their title.
Yeah, I see that. Going down to even the Apple iTunes app. So it's very interesting. Most people that are searching for a New York Times puzzle are looking for the crossword puzzle, right? Or maybe right. Some tips on the crossword puzzle or archives of the crossword puzzle or whatever it may be. Let's just say for entertainment's sake, if the New York Times wrote a story about puzzles that was blowing up or something like that, do you think that Google would then revise the query? Or if there's enough of a QDF trend that is pointing towards something else that's helping to define user intent, then that query won't be revised?
They might provide a in the news type answer box result.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, answer box, it's a short-term type thing. A query deserve freshness algorithm might trigger, and they'll show an answer box, and in the news answer box for New York Times puzzle.
And another question I have for you, and then I'll let you keep on going because just things pop up in my head, is over the past year, we've seen mobile searches trump desktop. And with a lot of, you know, with Google's focus with the Google app, and I guess it's not OK Google anymore or whatever, but the Google app, then also Apple with Siri and Microsoft with Cortana, we're seeing natural language queries increase or how-to queries, things like that, because of just the way that people typically do talk. Do you think audio queries have any effect, or the increase in audio queries over the past couple of years have any effect on where Google is going with these updates or additions to the algorithm?
I'm not so sure. There have been things, white papers from Google about speech recognition and how they've been able to optimize those and understand them a little bit better, understand the accents people speak with, filter those out if necessary. So, you know, I said there were a couple of names that were given out in the Bloomberg News interview. The other one I think I wrote it down. Let's see. I put it in here. Younghoo Wu. I looked him up. And it looked like he had written some patents that involved experimenting with queries and doing searches and Googling Google to get results to maybe speed up the process of what shows up to learn about what types of things are out there. To investigate, to find out things like our crossword puzzle experiment, investigate the query space around those and see what types of words tend to co-occur like that. I think that's part of the machine learning, how the machine learns.
And, you know, I think there was one example, and we've seen this in personalized search too, is that like, I think it was a presentation that Danny Sullivan was doing at an event that I attended in LA. And the first question was like, how old is President Obama?
Right.
And Google returns the age, right?
Right.
And then the next question was, how old is his wife? Not how old is Michelle Obama, but how old is his wife?
Right.
And that's Google returns her age. And
it's a machine. It's a information retrieval trick.
Yeah.
It's called coreference. Machine understands when you use a pronoun,
mm-hmm.
his wife, you're referring to the person from the query before.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is really the way that we tend to talk and have conversations in real life, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I see a couple of other examples in here of the query writing. And I found this to be interesting, is a rewriting of Social Security tax rate, where instead of just the typical rate information, it looks like a rate calculation of Social Security and tax. What did you see here that's a little bit different with this particular rewrite?
Okay, so I thought that was interesting because it looked at, it's trying to give us, with a revised query, it's trying to give us more than just matching the words on the page with the query.
Mm-hmm.
So it's looking for more than just pages that have the words Social Security tax rate on. So as it rewrites it, it says, okay, when people ask for rates, they're also usually asking for some type of calculation to take place.
Right.
So let's provide a result that has information about that.
Got you.
And you know, these things seem to be intuitive. They seem to make sense, but you're teaching a computer. And that's sort of where the artificial intelligence comes in.
Yeah. Have you seen Marcus Tandler's present? Do you know Marcus Tandler?
I gave a presentation with him at SMX West or East a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he did a pretty good one about how the Google search engine is just a tool to teach the AI. Like that's all it is.
Yeah.
It's a tool to teach, you know, their artificial intelligence robot, what people are looking for, how people interact, how people do this, how people do that, which is actually really interesting. But so, in essence, we're feeding the robot, right? We're feeding the robot, we're teaching the robot, and it's over time, the idea is things get better. So in the world of SEO, backtracking a little bit, we probably looked at about a good 4 or 5 years where there was slow evolution. I'll say between maybe 2002 and 2008, so to speak. Like before Universal rolled out, all the big changes, everything else. It was very 10 blue links. Produce good content, get links to your site. Of course, there were differences, but it didn't seem like things were growing as fast as they've been growing or changing as fast as has been happening. And what we're really seeing now is Google's ability to dynamically learn and change as people input queries into Google, right? Based upon the, I guess, the delta rate of their AI. and not necessarily an update that may happen once a year or once every 2 years or once every month on the first of the month, so to speak. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. We don't really see a lot of the evolution as it's going on,
right,
as it takes place. You know, we've been talking a lot in the past couple of years about direct questions and direct answers. But the first real time Google said anything about direct answers was in 2005. They wrote a blog post saying, hey, we're introducing this thing. It's called Google Q&A, where if you ask a question in the search box, we'll try to provide an answer at the top of search results. So that's been around for 10 years.
Amazing.
And, yeah. With the knowledge base type answers at the tops of results, those aren't all that different from the one box or answer box results that we've been seeing for years too. Mm-hmm. Now, usually those are filled up with other things, like a lot of people go searching for Cecil the lion. And next thing you know, someone searches for lions and you see a bunch of images of lions at the top of your results. It's an answer box result. It's triggered by lots of queries for pictures of lions.
So if I'm, say, reading about this update or reading about this announcement, and I see here that RankBrain should impact 15% of Google queries a day based upon the Bloomberg article.
And yeah, I was strained out on that, and I have to agree. It probably influences more.
Mm-hmm.
But what they said in the interview was that it's really helpful with the 15% of queries that could ask today that Google's never seen before.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which is a subtle difference, but it's a profound one.
Also, the percent of the queries numbers never really line up with search volume either, right? There's no 15% of Google queries that have a search volume of a million or more, or 15% of Google queries that are retail-oriented or whatever it may be. So say, as an SEO or a webmaster or a content producer, is what can be learned from what we're seeing thus far with the RankBrain update? Or is it more of a wait and see? I like to take the wait and see approach to search. This was just announced yesterday. I'm not going to start emailing everyone and letting them know that they have to do this, this, and that. But where do you kind of see this going?
I think I agree with you on the wait and see approach. There are times when it makes sense to dig in and try to do something. Like I ran across a patent like 10 years ago. They talked about definition results.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is really interesting. I create a bunch of glossary pages. I provide definitions of terms in a certain format, and I might start seeing those show up in search results at the tops of results with a definition of a term that somebody typed into a search box. I can try that today.
Yeah.
You know, this is a little bit more complex. I pointed it out. One patent, but they're likely multiples. I didn't mention anything about word vectors or paragraph vectors or some of the deep learning concepts that people were digging out and talking about in relation to RankBrain. And those are probably out there. There are supposedly hundreds of people working on this process, and it could have an impact, but it's worth taking your time and learning about and being careful and thinking about.
Well, here's a question for you, and we can kind of bridge into this conversation as well. I mean, you've been looking into search patents and technology patents for over a decade now. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen this happen where you may write something up or share something that you've seen published, and people tend to jump on it. But there is kind of a, hey, this is only one patent of many. And as you were saying earlier, when you looked into, you know, the engineers named for the RankBrain project, you started kind of reverse engineering that yourself and looking at other things that they have filed or that Google's filed on their behalf historically to start to put the pieces together. So It sounds like, for the most part, and I think we've had this conversation in the past where, you know, it's not like you can just go to the patent office and search for Google, right? You have to look at the name of the person filing the patent, where they worked, possibly even where they've worked in the past and the patents that they have filed with other employers in the past. Look into their LinkedIn, see where they are, what team they're working on, everything else. So there's a lot of research behind a lot of what you're putting together, is there not?
It's true. Absolutely.
So how'd you get started with this, and how'd you really get to the point where you could cut through and determine what's actually relevant to the day-to-day, like the definition patent that you stumbled across 10 years beforehand?
I was doing in-house SEO for a incorporation business in Delaware. And the location of the business in Delaware was really important. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure that when people search for something like Y Incorporated in Delaware, it showed up. So I had the idea of looking at patents from a deep investigation into a patent that some other people had done. It was called Information Retrieval from Historic Data. And it was written by like 9 really well-known search engineers, including Matt Cutts and some others. And it was as if they'd written lists of things that they thought might indicate spam or stale content.
Right.
And it got covered in a lot of places. And it was interesting. It was interesting seeing what they wrote in the patent and whether or not they were looking at those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the same thing with this geographic location-based patent, and it suggested doing some certain things, I don't remember what at this point in time, that might help a site rank better geographically. So I tried them, and they seemed to work.
Forgive me for a second on the way that patent law works, but at what point does the information in the patent become public?
It's always public. It's a public filing.
So it's public as soon as it's filed.
Yeah, you're asking the courts to protect your process described in the patent. So you're legally filing something that gives you the right to exclude other people from following a certain process.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to be able to read it to know that they can't infringe upon it. So you're creating a document that becomes a government document when you file it.
Interesting. So when a patent is pending, the information is still there for a researcher like yourself to go in and dig into. So not only are you able to look into the patents that have been, I guess, granted or approved, but also the patents that are out there that you know, may have a chance of living or may not.
Right. There's a certain point where they get published publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you can, if you're in a situation like I am, that's when you can go read them.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. So, and then also, it sounds like you have to have the names of the individuals, like we said. Or can you
look by
company?
Not all the time, but you can do searches by people's names.
What other tips do you have and secrets for finding this information out there that you can share?
Patents can be hard to read. Sometimes they the words used in them don't follow standard definition, standard dictionary definitions, and they might be defined within the patent itself. And it may be a little bit different than that dictionary definition.
So is this an attempt to kind of mask the information to the common user, or just more so something completely different?
One of the phrases that tends to get used a lot in a patent is to a person of knowledgeable about the art of the patent. And that phrase refers to people who might read a patent, understand it immediately, what it's referring to, how to build something based upon the patent. But most of the times, patents aren't exact roadmaps, as in, this is how you build something. If you know something about the field that the patent's in, you might be able to.
Right.
I came across a blog post by a guy who was a named inventor on a patent I'd written about. And he commented on my write-up of that patent. He said, this guy used a lot more words than I did when I coded the invention.
So, well, I remember stumbling across, I think it was it Gilberto Gil, the Brazilian musician and the director of culture at the time for the government. Right. And you had stumbled across a patent that, or was it a technology that the Brazilian government was implementing for people to be able to more or less mash up and mix samba and...
I was writing about copyright and the Brazilian approach to remix, where people would post songs online that other people could download and change around, add stuff to. You know, somebody might record like the drums and upload it. And somebody might download that, add guitar to it, upload it back, you know, re-add it online to let other people make changes to. So David Byrne from the Talking Heads made friends with Gilberto Gil, who at the time was the...
Minister of Culture?
Minister of Culture. Yeah. For, was it Peru?
Brazil, I think.
Brazil. Okay, it's possible. Yeah. I believe I wrote a blog post on a different blog I had at the time, and he left a comment.
That's cool.
Uh-huh. So, and he's a really well-known recording artist down there.
Yeah. So very, very, very cool. So, like you're saying, sometimes a patent doesn't have the entire roadmap, but if you can look at numerous different patents and see where people are going and engineers are going, it kind of gives you the chance to piece all that together.
It helps.
Yeah. Cool. And what was, besides the two Google ones, has there been anything that you've found that that you've seen is totally followed every milk and cranny that they've defined in the patent that was awarded? In terms of a major search change, algorithmic change, or search display change, or anything like that?
Well, this one, the concept is context for query substitutions. It's worth spending time reading through. Because it gives you some idea of what they might be doing when you submit a query, how they might be transforming it and rewriting it. It's not necessarily going to help you write better pages, but at least getting a sense of that, you know, context really matters when you define something. So you take the word car, and normally it's a synonym for the word automobile, except when it follows the word railroad, as in railroad car, then it's not. So that's a substitution rule. A car is an auto, except for when it shows up behind the word railroad. That's a substitution rule, an example when it's not a substitution.
So I'll take a dig into this as well, and also send out your findings to our listeners. Have you published anything else on RankBrain besides your post on GoFish Digital? I know it's only been a day, by the way.
I've made some notes for some other stuff.
Okay.
Like there's one video that I think is really good that people should watch.
Very nice. If you have anything else to send over, please let me know. While I have you on the horn,
yeah.
What else should folks in the world of SEO pay attention to? That any recent changes and things like that. Like I know you're doing a lot with semantics and microdata right now, are you not?
I'm looking at them. I think it's worth paying attention to. There was an article this morning, I forget which site it was from, which featured the CEO of Priceline. And he said, SEO is dead.
Of course.
And there was no comment section, so I couldn't point out to him the fact that maybe just his SEO wasn't that good. And I looked at Priceline and I found some examples. There's very limited semantic markup.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he complained about in the article was that he wasn't doing too well with regional locations for hotels. He wasn't ranking well when he tried to rank for Las Vegas hotels.
Okay.
So I looked at the hotels pages, and I noticed they all use a schema place markup, where they include latitude and longitude for the places.
Mm-hmm. Is it the Priceline office on each page? Please tell me it's not that.
Is it the Priceline?
Is it the latitude and longitude for the main Priceline office used on each page by default?
No, they've got like Baltimore hotels, Pittsburgh hotels, Atlanta hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the code for each of those in the place schema, they say latitude equals zero, longitude equals zero.
Ooh.
For each of them. So it's like you're telling the search engine where your page is relevant to, but you're just giving it bad information.
Especially a page that doesn't represent a true location. So you're trying to build a location page with aggregate information from other locations, and you take the time to have that schema tag included, which makes it confusing, right?
It's a good idea including it, but
yeah, but you might want to,
right. Yeah,
you may want to customize it.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is not latitude zero, longitude zero, and neither is Las Vegas, but they are on the Priceline website.
SEO is dead.
SEO is dead.
Been hearing that forever.
Uh huh.
Well, thanks a lot, Bill. I really appreciate you taking the time today to jump on the podcast. I typically don't do these like by surprise or whatever, but I really wanted to get an understanding myself of what folks are finding with Rank Brain and everything else. And who better to turn to than my old buddy Bill Slosky to run through that and educate the listeners as well, of course.
Hopefully we'll have more as time passes.
Very cool.
It's only been a day, right?
Yeah. And Bill, Go Fish Digital, you have two awards under your belt there now, don't you?
Yeah, we were really fortunate to walk away in the past month or so with a Landy Award from Search Engine Land and a U.S. Search Award at PubCon for the same campaign. It was for a limousine service in Northern Virginia. They were already doing well business-wise because they had landed contracts with government and businesses to provide shuttles.
Oh, yeah.
But we helped broaden the appeal, the range of their traffic, of their business, introducing tours of breweries and wineries.
Mm-hmm.
And making it clearer that you could get a limo for special events like weddings and proms and things like that.
Yeah, so turning it into experiential vacation packages more than just transportation, especially nowadays, right?
Because and ranking well for those, and they picked up a lot of traffic and they picked up a lot of business.
Very good. Very mm-hmm. good. Good to see, especially in the day of Uber and Lyft, that a company like that, a smaller company like that can grow. So fantastic. Mm-hmm. Bill, where can our listeners find you online?
They can find me at all the usual places. I tend to hang out at social media websites because that's my water cooler. Since I work remotely, the people I see every day are the people I see at Twitter and Google Plus and Facebook.
Yeah, likewise.
Uh-huh. And my own blog at SEO by the Sea and the Go Fish Digital blog at gofishdigital.com.
Great. Thanks, Bill. And you don't use your old handle anymore, do you?
I once upon a time went for 8 years with a somewhat unpronounceable username at a good-sized forum. Gotcha. As the administrator there. And I started meeting people in real life offline. And they would say, "You're that, I don't know how to pronounce it." Yeah. So I changed it on that site. I stopped using it.
Good. Well, thanks again, Bill. I appreciate you taking the time. I'll let you get back to your fish tacos here out on the West Coast. I'm enjoying life out here as well. And I hope to meet up with you soon.
That'd be good.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Again, you've been listening to Search and Social, a Rainmaker.fm production with Lauren Baker, your host, and with Bill Slosky from Go Fish Digital and SEO by the Sea. So thank you.